So, dann willkommen zurück. Es gab eine kurzfristige Planänderung, weil der Vortragende ausgefallen ist. Von daher gibt es jetzt einen thematisch verwandten Vortrag. Es gibt also nicht einen Vergleich zwischen Puppet, Chef und Salt, sondern einfach nur Puppet ohne Chef und Salt. Und unser Vortragender ist Hans-Christian Otto. Bitte schön.
Ja, gut, das Relevante, was ich jetzt zur Einführung gesagt hätte, hat er dann auch schon gesagt. Ich habe den Vortrag schon ein paar Mal gehalten. Deswegen habe ich spontan gerade einfach gesagt, ich würde einspringen, wenn ihr das Thema haben wollt. So, lauter reden, willst du mir sagen? Ja. Würde es irgendwen stören, wenn ich auf Englisch rede? Okay, I'll try that. I'm still a bit hungover from yesterday, so that might be quite funny. In addition, I just tried to review the slides, and I don't know what to expect in this talk, so sorry if something's getting confused for you. At first, some words about me. You already realized I'm not the guy who wanted to talk. If someone really wants this comparison, you might want to leave because I can tell you anything about Chef. I tried it like 2 days. I didn't try Salt Stack at all, but I'd still be happy if you'd stay here and let me show you Puppet a bit. Normally, this slide makes more sense because I can put this arrow somewhere, but this won't work here. So let me tell you a few words about me before we talk about Puppet. I'm MoodyKoo at Twitter, so if you want to get in touch with me, use Twitter and send me a message. Outside of Twitter, I'm director of software development with CrossScan, a German-based company specialized in people counting solutions, which means if you, for instance, enter a Vodafone retail store in Germany, there's some device on top of the entrance which counts how many persons walk in the store and transmit this information to a web server where we provide analysis on this data in a web-based application, which is running on multiple servers, and we set up these nodes with Puppet, so that's why I'm talking about Puppet. Normally, I'm one of these guys. I don't know if anyone has ever seen these fluffy things. I'm a PHP developer since 2004, and I've been doing Puppet since when? 2011, good to know. That was when I started playing around with it. I checked Chef and Puppet about 2 years ago now, and I compared them to each other, and for me the resume of that was they don't really differ that much. It's the major difference from my point of view was Chef has a Ruby embedded DSL, so you write Ruby code when you write Chef code, and Puppet has a completely own DSL, which prevents you from doing like using Active Record and MySQL connections in your Puppet manifests, which you could do with Chef from what I understand. And I really don't want to do that. So I like the idea of separating it. Before we're going to talk about Puppet, there's a couple of questions I want to ask you. Who of you used Puppet before? Okay, I'm wondering if you're still going to learn something. I'm not sure about that. I'm also going to talk about Vagrant a little bit. Anyone used that before? Okay, cool. Someone used Chef? Yeah, maybe one of you wants to tell some words about Chef later, or just interrupt me if I'm saying wrong stuff about Chef. Same applies to Puppet. I'm not the perfect Puppet guy, so if one of you thinks I'm saying something wrong or missing something, just interrupt me and say some words. There's also this CF engine thing. I don't want to know how few used it because that's a long time ago, but at least one guy used it. Someone else did? You did? Okay. Some did that. I think, these days there are the cool kids on the block like Puppet and Chef and SaltStack. So, forget about CF engine. Who of you is a software developer? For real? The rest are system administrators, I guess. Those software developers, you don't have to raise your hand. I think every one of you uses a version control system. But who of you maintains some kind of a network server infrastructure thing and uses a version control system for that? Who of you doesn't use a version control system but does this stuff? You're all too shy, I know. At least one was brave enough to mention that. So from what I learned, many software, or nearly every good software developer really wants to use a version control system for a software. But it just started about a couple of years ago that everyone realized we also want to do this for our infrastructure, like for our configuration files and all that stuff. And Puppet is a way to help you with this. One last thing before we get to the topic. If you got questions, just interrupt me and ask me. I don't really like this keeping the questions for the end stuff. I'm sorry if that's against Proscon rules. And please use the microphone. You didn't, by the way. Sorry. That was early.
Oh, it's a rather simple question. Ansible, colleague of mine at my last company was very fond of that. How does that fit in the image?
I never tried Ansible. I saw the website, that's all.
Okay, thanks.
Sorry. Okay, what we're going to talk about is, at first, we're talking a bit of about a small introduction, what Puppet actually is. Then I'm going to show you some examples on what to do with it. Then I'll tell you a little bit about Vagrant. Maybe we can check if we really want to do, yeah, we're going to do that. I'll ignore your opinion there. And then I'll show you a bit more advanced stuff in Puppet. Maybe you don't really understand what I'm saying there. It's just for you to get a glimpse at what you could do. It's really nothing that you really have to learn. At the end, I always do this. I just throw a bit of words at you and give you hints on what you might want to look up later. So let's talk about Puppet. When we're going to talk about Puppet, we're going to talk about like this thing. And we're going to talk about this. That's a really awesome quote I copied from some other speaker who copied it from Twitter. That's a guy who tweeted, do you know what we call adding monitoring to over 30 websites, 10 servers, and over 50 services on those servers? A Puppet run. So what he said is he only had to do one thing to set up the monitoring for all these service applications and so on. That's something, I hope we have enough time for that, that I'm going to show you after at the end of the talk on how you can do that with Puppet very easily. And it's not feature complete, but it just should show you how it works. I had some funny idea what this should show you. I don't know. Oh, now it's getting dry. That's what I wanted to tell, right. Because we're talking about this basic introduction stuff that I don't really care about, but persons ask me to tell them about it. So Puppet is used for configuration management. Configuration management here means we write configuration files, but also we install applications, we start services, we restart services on configuration changes and all that stuff. Puppet is open source, but there's a commercial version available, like with nearly every open source software these days. I don't really know what it does. It simplifies the setup and glues together some applications, I think. I never used it. Puppet is written in Ruby, but as I mentioned before, you don't really have to write Ruby code. I can't write Ruby, but I already copy-paste adapted some stuff for Puppet, so that works quite well in most cases. Mentioned that one before. Obvious. Puppet has two ways on how you could use it. There's a so-called OneNote setup where you just have the Puppet configuration files and say, please apply these configuration files to my local machine. And there's the so-called master agent setup, where several nodes, agents they're called, which mean computer servers, whatever, connect to a so-called Puppet master and retrieve the configuration files from there. This has several advantages. I'm going to talk about it later. The Puppet master might have performance issues if you have really, really many nodes. I never had that issue. We don't have that many nodes. So some companies decided to actually package their Puppet manifests in a Debian file and deploy it to every server and run it there. So they still have this distributed system, but no load on a central point, and they don't have a single point of failure and all that stuff. This is possible too. I never did it. Puppet is declarative. This means you don't say, please install Apache, but it means you write, please have an Apache installed. That's what I said. There are some exceptions where you really have to say, please do this. But that's, just in some use cases. We're going to talk about it later. Puppet then, on every run, ensures this state. So you tell them, please have an Apache installed. And if there is one, it does nothing. If there is none, it installs it. There's actually one point missing here. Puppet has two ways on how you can run it. There's a so-called Puppet daemon, which makes a Puppet run, which means applying the configuration files every few minutes. But you could also use Cron if you prefer that and say, please let Puppet run every 30 minutes. It has, well, never mind, not important. One important thing, very important thing, is idempotency. Does everyone know what it is? Who doesn't know what it is? Okay, idempotency is some mathematical term. It means you should always be able to apply an action, and doesn't matter how often you apply it, the result should still be the same. So multiplying by one should be idempotent. Multiplying by minus one isn't, because the result changes always. Mathematicians could probably explain that better than me. But that's something you have to keep in mind. So don't do something like append something to a file because that's not idempotent, but instead say, write this exact content to the file. This is something you have to keep in mind, because that's, if you don't understand it and don't keep it in mind, you're gonna run in some weird troubles, because Puppet is gonna run every 5 minutes or something and then does the same thing, action again. Okay, enough of that boring stuff. I'm just gonna show you some examples. I mentioned before we can install packages with Puppet. If we're on a Debian system, we would just write apt-get install Apache 2 for installing Apache 2. If we use Puppet, we write, if we use Puppet, we create a file, apache2.pp. PP is the extension for Puppet, obviously. And then call Puppet agent apply Apache 2 PP. And if that has this contents, Puppet will ensure that the Apache 2 package is installed. And that's the first basic Puppet script.
So this is for Debian. How do you manage the different distributions where the packages have different names?
That's actually what I'm going to show now.
Okay, thank you.
Imagine you also have a Red Hat system. At Red Hat, you would have typed yum install httpd. You could might wonder, why is it called httpd and not Apache 2? That totally makes sense. I could explain it to you, but I still like to make fun of that. You would have to write this. You only have to write package, so Puppet Puppet manages the different installers, like apt or yum, and I don't know how they're called. But you have to take care of the package name here. So if you want to glue it together and use both, you have to do a switch case statement or an if statement or something like this. And right here, I'm actually introducing several new concepts. For instance, I'm showing you how to create a variable and how to use some kind of switch statement in some funny Puppet syntax. So what this does is, depending on the operating system, set the variable web server package name to Apache 2 or httpd. And yes, I know Ubuntu is not important here, but it's showing the point. And then you can use this variable name somewhere and say, please ensure that a package called web server package name, for instance, Apache 2 httpd, is installed. And I'm again introducing a new concept here, because I'm creating this so-called resource of type package with the name web server. Before, I wrote down, instead of web server, I wrote httpd or Apache 2. Right here, I'm giving it a meaningful name. That's a hint that I give you. You don't want to really call those resources exactly like the package names, because if the package name changes, you got to rename this resource, and you could reference resources within your Puppet manifests, and this is like a variable name, and if the variable name changes only because some package name changed, that's going to be annoying. So give them meaningful names in most cases. You might also ask, what's this operating system variable I just used? That's a so-called fact. Puppet has a tool called factor. You can run it on command line. I'm going to show that in a minute. That generates fact on every node, on every server that you have. They kind of describe the current node. There's, for instance, this operating system fact, which tells me this is in Ubuntu or in Debian or whatever. All these facts are available as variables in Puppet. So if you check out which facts are available, you can always use them in Puppet. There's, as I mentioned, also a command line tool, and this looks like this. I could type this, enter a factor, wait and wait and wait, and at some point there's going to be some output. And for instance, there's this operating system Ubuntu thingy that I just used. And there's also some other stuff like which Ubuntu version is it, and so on. And you can use all these variables. There's one important thing you have to know. I think there's no complete list of available nodes, available facts, and they differ depending on the machine that you're running it on. I think there are like a couple of facts that you can rely on, but I'm not sure of that. So you always have to ensure that they're actually available. This is kind of annoying. This is like, yeah, we're doing mistakes that others did before, and I don't know, there's no way to really solve the problem, but it still annoys. Are there any questions about what I just showed you? Okay. There's one thing that you couldn't see, but which is quite important. The order of resources, the way you write that down, isn't the order of execution. So if you say install a package and then start a service in this order, it might happen that it first tries to start the service, which has not yet been installed, and fails. So you have to manually define orders between resources. I'm going to show you how this is possible. We still have our web server package, and then I create a configuration file. Say, please ensure that the file is present and that it has the content foobar. And then I say, please require the package web server. And this P is, the capital P is actually something you have to do whenever you reference a resource, but not define it. You have to use a capital starting letter. I don't know, maybe that was the first parser the developers wrote and didn't know how else to do this. This is kind of annoying at the beginning, but it's nothing you really have to worry about. It's after a few minutes, you'll automatically do that. So this is actually the point that I mentioned before, where you reference other resources and meaningful names would be useful. If this second file definition is somewhere completely different than not in the same Puppet file, and you reference the web server file and change the name, everything's bad. I just showed you how to create a file, and I'm going to dig into this a little bit. Let's say you have this file that I mentioned before. You say ensure present, and the content should be something. That's a way that you can use to create files. There's also the possibility to say, please use a file located somewhere and copy the contents. And you can actually use facts within this. So you can say, OK, please use the host name of the machine for finding the source of the file. So you can have configuration files for every host. This is just an example. You don't want to do this. Actually, I'm missing an example here. It's probably coming later. Sorry. I also showed you that we can mentioned, I don't think I didn't show it yet, we can manage services. So use etc initd, I don't know, light httpd start. And if the system doesn't have etc initd but is a Windows system, then something else is going to happen. Or if it's, I don't know, upstart, you can say, please use upstart for this. And I say ensure running, which means please ensure that the service is currently running. And enable true means please make it start on every boot of the system. So tell the system to start it on some run levels, basically. There are some cooler things you can do with these dependencies between services. Did any one of you ever change a config file and wondered why nothing changed and forgot to restart the service? Happened to me a million times. And Puppet really helps you to do this. If we have the package here and the service and say, OK, the service obviously requires the package, and we also have the config file, we can do this. We say, please ensure it's present, it has this content, and it requires the package, and notify the service. This means every time this resource is changed, it restarts the service. So you're not going to forget about this, you're not going to forget restarting the service ever again. It's totally rocks. That was the moment where it started loving Puppet. Obviously, Chef and the others can do that too, but it's really a cool thing. I mentioned before you don't want to use the host name and file templates for using for creating different configurations on every node, but instead you want to use templates. Templates are, yeah, like templates. You say you have a template file somewhere which has these variables. Oh, I might not want to use this because of the second one, right? So you can use variables within the templates, and those variables are just the variables you defined in the Puppet manifest. For instance, you could use facts, or you can create your own variables like with the web server package name before. And then the configuration will depend on how you defined your Puppet manifest. And we'll talk about that later a little bit. So far, any questions? OK, now I'm going to talk about, was there one?
One word about the notify. You notified a service, and in the case of service, it meant shut down and restart. But where does that come from, and how it's for other resource types?
Actually, I think there's only one other resource types where notifying works. I never tried it with the others because I don't have an idea what it could do. So the most important reason for this notify thing, use case, not reason, sorry, is restarting services. You could also execute some commands there, but I don't know any other valid use case for it. So it's just about that. I'm going to try rushing about this because I'm not sure how important Vagrant is for you. Vagrant is some open source tool someone started a couple of years ago, and now it's all enterprise-y and got this new shiny logo instead of this cool logo. I don't know why they did it. Vagrant is the solution to a problem that always occurs with web development. And oh, I think it's with development at all. It's like the developer creates some kind of a product and ships it, and it's like this beautiful chocolate. And then the user uses it, and it's this broken chocolate. And he says to the developer, hey, this stuff isn't working. The developer looks at it, and it's working. And he says, yeah, that works for me. That's something that every developer says. Right? I think every one of you who's a developer said that before. There's also this cool explanation from Urban Dictionary. You can read it on the slides if you check them. Vagrant actually automates the creation of virtual machines. So it uses Puppet, for instance, currently works with VirtualBox and VMware and some other stuff like Amazon, EC2, and so on. Also written in Ruby, it's also open source, except for the VMware plugin, which is a paid plugin. And I'll show you what it does by showing an example on how a developer at our company sets up his development machine. Actually, there's one developer here from my team who did it, and it didn't work that well. Please don't tell anyone. But normally, it's like this. You clone some Git repository from our internal GitHub, and you actually have to say, please recurse submodules, but never mind. Then you change into the directory, call this init application script, which downloads the source codes of our applications. You can forget about that. And you say vagrant up. And then you go and grab a coffee, because this might going to take a while. Actually, thanks to Wood, who's sitting out there, who gave me that cool picture and who makes awesome coffee. At our company, I think it takes about 1.5 hours to set up this box. But it's all done automatically. And then you can open the web browser on a local port, and our application is up and running. This might not really sound that interesting, but if you understand what happens in the background, it's way more interesting. At first, we checked out the Puppet and Vagrant configuration files. I'm not going to dig into the configuration files here, but I'm just going to mention it. Then we check out the source code, and then we download a so-called Vagrant base box, which is a template for virtual machines. For instance, in our case, it's a Ubuntu with no packages except for Puppet on it. And then it installs and configures a couple of services. For us, that means like a web server, PHP, MySQL, CouchDB, Couchbase, I don't know, all these things you have these days. And it's all done automatically. And yeah, you can show the new developer around your office and some stuff, but you don't have to take a senior developer who helps him set up his machine. It also fetches a database dump from our production environment, at least a part of it, because the database is big. But yeah, that's all that happened here with just these like five lines. Sorry. This is the part that I'm going to skip here because I think it's not that interesting for you. And this is the moment where I hate my animations again. That's actually something I might want to mention. There's a way to configure Vagrant like that you say we have multiple machines here. For instance, we tried out RabbitMQ some month ago, and we needed a local RabbitMQ cluster on the developer's machine, And you can with Vagrant just say, okay, here's somewhere in the Puppet manifest, and please create three virtual machines that have all the same configurations, have some network interfaces, and then you can try out this new software in a cluster on your local computer. And it's, again, just these few lines, and it works for everyone who wants to try it. The setup I showed before just set up one virtual machine for our developers. But what you could also do is like create your web server and database server clusters with this setup, and yeah, come closer to your production environment. You might see here, I'm again using the same Puppet manifests, and you might wonder, how do you distinguish which node gets which configuration? Therefore, Puppet has this node syntax where you say, okay, if the node has the host name web, then install the package Apache 2. If it has the node, the host name database, install MySQL Server. And this is the same way how you configure your Puppet master. On your Puppet master, you say you have these nodes and they have this configuration files, or this resources, sorry. And actually, a node asks the Puppet master, says, hey, this is my fully qualified domain name. Do you have a configuration for me? And if the master doesn't, it's going to ask, hey, this is my host name. Do you have a configuration for me? If it doesn't, it's going to say, please give me the default configuration. So you can easily bootstrap new machines. You can also use regular expressions instead of host names here, which is something we do. So we have this app server and two digits scheme, and all app servers automatically get the same configuration. And you don't have to do anything for setting up new machines except for installing Puppet on them. How do you go about passwords was the question. Now I understand. You mean like how do you deploy the secrets of your application?
Yes.
Yeah, just store them there. Just write them down there. This repository has to be secured, obviously, but I guess so does your source code. I mean, for us, our MySQL password, I would actually tell it to you because you can access the database server anyways. But I don't want to give you our source code. That's way more valuable. So you should trust your source code repository anyways, from my point of view. Maybe if you're working for a bank, you have some rules. I don't know about that, but for us, it works perfectly. I like pictures. Now we're going to speed things a little bit up, and this might get a little bit more complicated now because we're diving into it a bit deeper. And if you don't really understand everything now, it's totally fine. It's important for me to tell you a little bit about the concepts. And the first concept I'd like to talk about is the concept of classes. It's like in software development, you have classes that group together some things that have to, yeah, you know what I mean, I hope. For instance, we can create a class Light HTTPD, which aggregates several resources here, like a package configuration which installs the server, the configuration files, the servers, and so on. And this is all grouped together here. You have to, you should do the same like in every programming language, one class per file, and so on. And then you'll start to have a good structure of your Puppet manifests. And to use this class, you just have to write class name, and you can also pass it some configuration. I'm going to show that later. I'm not sure if there's a slide about it. Yeah, there's a slide, no mind. There's also the concept of modules, which in turn group classes together. So we can have a class Light HTTP, module Light HTTPD, which has a class Light HTTPD and has to resist in the manifests init.php file. Otherwise, it's the class name should be the file name. But for this init, it's an exception. Just keep that in mind. There's also some other stuff. You can group some files that you need, and you can group the templates all in the module. There's actually a lot of modules on GitHub which you can use, which are free to use as open source software. That's actually something where Chef is probably a bit better, I guess. There are way more Chef cookbooks on the internet than there are Puppet modules. I don't have any numbers on this. This is just something that I felt and someone told me yesterday again. I'm not really sure about it, but you might want to check that out. And that's an advantage of Puppet and Chef against SaltStack, which is kind of new, and there's not that much stuff on the internet yet. it's going to change someday, and you really want to change it and all that stuff. If we have these modules, there's some cool feature we can use. I showed you the source thing of files before, and you can also reference files within modules. You say puppet colon slash 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 and so on, somewhere modules light HTTPD index HTML. And it then uses the index HTML that is above there. So from the module, it doesn't matter where the module is. Puppet has a so-called module path where you tell them, please look in these directories for modules. But this way it's grouped together and you don't need any absolute paths or something. And this works in master agent setup and in single node setup. If it's master agent, it tells the puppet master, please give me this file, and the puppet master will look it up. You don't have to deploy it on your own. And if you have a single node setup, it's just going to look in etc puppet modules or something. Yeah, I mentioned this before. You really want to group your stuff in modules and want to use modules and classes and all that stuff. I think it's quite obvious. Also, modules are some kind of namespacing. So you can create a class called Light HTTPD Service and put it in the manifests folder of your module. Any questions so far? Okay. Then let's get back to this tweet, which is about monitoring applications, servers, and so on. Until now, I always showed you how to create a resource which is applied on your local machine. With this, it's a bit different because you have a monitoring server somewhere, and you have the servers that run the service that should be monitored. So you actually have to transfer some data somewhere. And for that, we have to do two things. At first, we have to annotate the servers and services that we want to monitor. And then we have to configure the, in my case, Nagios host, which actually performs the checks. Nagios is actually the perfect example for this because Puppet has some Nagios resources built in. For other monitoring solutions, you have to do something on your own. I showed you the node definitions before, and I mentioned that you can use regular expressions here, and that's what I'm doing here with the appserve I mentioned before. And I create a resource called Nagios host, give it some name and some configuration as we did before, and I put these two at signs in front of there. I don't know why they decided to use two at signs, but they did. And if you do this, then it's a so-called exported resource, which means it's not applied on your local machine, but sent back to the puppet master. And this obviously only works in master agent mode and doesn't work in a single node mode. And on the Nagios host, you then use this so-called spaceship operator there, which looks quite funny. And then it automatically collects all the exported resources from other hosts and applies them locally. So anyone got this? OK, maybe I have another example. Do I have it? No, I don't really have that. Too bad. OK, imagine it wouldn't say Nagios host there, but it would instead say file. And if these at signs wouldn't be there, you would expect a file on the app serve to be created. But because of the at signs, there's no file created on the app server. But instead, it sends a message to the puppet master, which means, hey, I exported this file here, which should have this location. Please store it somewhere. And then when the Nagios host, the Ikinga, I don't know how to pronounce it, .crosscan.com connects to the puppet master and asks for its configuration, it says, please give me all files that you exported on Nagios host, in our case, on any node. And please apply them on this node. So getting back to the file, if you would have created this exported file and collected it on the Ikinga host, then there would be files created there and not on the app server. Maybe someone got it now. If not, read about exported resources and trust me, it's awesome because you can just say, hi, on this node, please monitor this server and service and some other server is going to monitor it. It's totally fun. I'm going to skip to the next topic. I mentioned resources before And actually, I didn't explain you what resources are. Nearly everything that you define in Puppet is a so-called resource. Like the package was a resource, a package resource. There's also a file resource or a service resource and some other things. And those resources must be unique, which means I can only have one service with the name LightHttpd. And this might be some problem. Oh, also, I can only have one class with this name. But everything I showed before, there was no problem because you only want to install the LightHttpd once. But let's say you might want to configure virtualhost for your web server. Then you most likely going to have more than one for a server. And there's a solution for that, which is called defined types. They're kind of comparable to classes because you group resources again with them, but they allow multiple instances. And you use them like any other resource type that comes with Puppet. So if you create your own file, you can just use it this way. I think I got an example for that. Why is this not working? Oh. Under Debian, and I think it's a Debian thing, you have a with some services, you have a configuration folder called conf-enabled and a folder conf-available. Conf-available comes with some example configurations that you can use, and you can symlink them to the conf-enabled folder, and then the web server is going to use it. That's something that I use with our web server quite a lot. So I created this resource, which is called LightHttpd enable conf, and I give it this name 10 status, and then LightHttpd zimlinks the file. Oh, and I give it a title. I didn't mention that this thing is called title. Maybe I did. I don't know. Sorry. If we define this defined type, we write define, the name of the defined type, in this case, LightHttpd enable conf, and then as in classes, we create resources that should be aggregated here. In this case, a file, and it should be somewhere, and I use the title as the file name, and I say, please ensure that it's a link which targets some other directory, the conf available folder most likely, notify the web server, and require the package of the web server. And then I only have to write this code to actually create the symlink. And this is way more readable from my point of view than always writing this stuff. And this is actually another hint that I want to give you. In software development, you always want to create meaningful class names and code that actually tells you like a story what happens. And the same applies for Puppet. So sometimes, like this enable conf, it's just nice to have a way that shows me immediately, okay, please enable the, this enables the fast CGI configuration of the web server. If I would have to write this, I could read it as well, but it would take way longer. So that's a nice way to create reusable code in a way that you can really read what happens. If we would put this in our module, it would be in this path, so right next to the classes. Whenever you define your own defined type, you might want to implement this ensure variable that I mentioned that we used before, because that's something Puppet developers expect, that with a defined type they can say please ensure that this is absent, which means please remove the package if it's installed. And you really have to care about idempotency here. All these defined types should be idempotent, otherwise you'll hate yourself. And something that's quite handy for export for defined types is the so-called exec, like execution resource. I'm going to show an example of this. It allows you to execute shell commands. And this is really the situation where I'm going to mention it again. If you execute a shell command, you really have to take care that it's idempotent, because most likely if you just do it, it won't be. But you have to think about how to make it idempotent. And here I'm going to show you an example, a real-world example, on how we configure CouchDB replication at CrossGen. If you don't know CouchDB, it's not important for this talk, but you really want to check it out. It's awesome. The replication really rocks. It's the only database which actually does that well from my point of view. If you disagree, you should have went to Chris' talk, because I think he's going to tell CouchDB sucks right at this point of time. With CouchDB, to create a replication, you have to say, please replicate this database, and it's using HTTP, so you give a URL for that. to this other database. And what by doing this, you have to do this, you have to send a post request somewhere to some HTTP server. And this is a bit complicated and annoying, and I wanted this shiny wrapper, which is quite readable from my point of view. And I wrote a Puppet manifest for this, and I totally hated it because it was totally unreadable. Because you have to first check, is there already a replication running? And if it isn't, start it. If it is already running, do nothing. And this gets quite annoying with Puppet because it's not for sequential code. It's just for defining something. And so I created a shell script, or in my case, a PHP script, which I can call like this and say, please add a replication on localhost, which is the server that should start the replication from the first database to the second database, and there's a slash at the wrong position. I hope you still understand what I want to tell you. And with this, it was easy to write the Puppet manifest for this. It's actually this. It's probably a bit tiny, so I removed the unimportant part. And what I did in Puppet is I basically created a wrapper for the shell script I created before. And this is another hint I want to give you, something you really want to do, because what this shell script does, it's not that much magic, but writing it in Puppet really sucks. But creating a wrapper for the shell script I showed you is quite nice. I create a defined type, and I give it some parameters. In the top, the ensure, the source, and the target. I create a variable just because it's easier, which concatenates source and target. Then I create a switch case statement, depending on if I want to ensure that it's present or that it's absent. And in case of present, I use this exec resource. I give it a name again, and I say, please execute the command CouchDB replication at parameters, unless, and that's the line before that, CouchDB replication exists with the parameters, has an exit code of 0. So that's actually quite easy. Again, if you don't really get it by 100%, but just get the concept, I'm totally happy. And the same is for deleting the replication. Any questions on that? Okay. Then I'm going to get back to the exported resources from before and merge that with the defined type of replication, because CouchDB has this awesome replication, but it has no auto discovery, which could say, please get all the database nodes in your same local network and create an application between them. But that's something we can do with Puppet. Again, I create a exported resource. I can add these at signs in front of my defined types as well. It doesn't really have to be a built-in resource. And then I collect all these exported resources on all database hosts. So I only need these few lines to make every database server announce them to the Puppet master as, I want CouchDB replication, and fetch all servers or all CouchDB replications that have already been sent to the database server. Again, you don't have to really get the point totally, just it's possible like this, and it's totally easy if you understand Puppet. I mentioned I cheated a bit. There's actually some stuff missing, but that's unimportant here. You can look on the slides or this gist, and yeah, if you really care about it. I gave this talk at a conference where I stepped in for someone else again, and the guy who announced it called it something like how to keep your production environment close to your development environment, and this is what I'm going to talk about here now. Sorry. Wait a second.
Things with the defined type you talked about, there are also types and providers. Isn't this the final solution to realize something like that? Because you use execs in a defined type?
What you mentioned is that there are so-called providers which could solve the issue I solved here. That's totally right, but I mentioned before, writing plugins for Puppet would require me to write Ruby code. I can't do that, and I don't want to do that. If you can do it, do it. But for us, for me, it was easier to write a PHP wrapper, which does this because I can speak PHP. But it's a total valid use case for providers here. It's just something I didn't want to use. And I don't know, it's good for Ruby people, but if you don't do Ruby, it's probably easier to create a wrapper script with your programming language that you are using every day. But yeah, you're right, you could do that. So how does this all help us to make the gap between our production and testing and staging and development environment smaller? First important part is you want to reuse the manifests. Puppet code is called manifest. I don't know if I mentioned that before. Sorry if I didn't. You should reuse them. Like with every source code, you want to create reusable components. And something that I did here, and I realized that's actually a thing and it has a name, is that it's called roles. I called it node classes. If I would have known the name before, I would have used it, obviously, which is actually a class, in this case, a class nodes web server and nodes database server, which aggregate all the configuration again. Only the parameters that differ from production to development or staging or whatever are the things that you have to pass in here. And then you have the exact same code, except for some variables, on your production environment as you have in your development environment. And then it's way closer to each other. So that's something you want to do. So this is how you would write the production code. If you have the staging environment, it could like this, could look like this. So there's different IP addresses and stuff. And on your development boxes, you probably have all on one machine, and then you just use both classes in one machine, which is something you have to take care about that it works. And then you have nearly the same setup. That's something you really want to achieve. Okay, my next slide says we're coming to an end. It's not done yet. I still have like 30 slides. But this is the part where I'm just going to throw some words at you. And the first thing is something this is basically a summary of experiences I got. This is something that a friend of mine tried to use Puppet and didn't really understand that Puppet is not only about setting up a machine, but maintaining it. He only wanted to install his web server and database server and all that stuff and said, why shouldn't I just write a bash script? It's way faster. And for sure, if you don't do Puppet and don't know Puppet, it's way faster to write a four-line bash script that does apt-get install some packages and create some config file. But Puppet allows you to really maintain the environment and change the environment, change configuration. If you do this shell script, it's probably not idempotent, so you can rerun it whenever you want. And this is something you also have to keep in mind while you write your Puppet manifests, that you want to run them all the time and that they should change the servers and not only set it up. Also, I always pretend that Puppet is some kind of infrastructure documentation. If your company is cool, you probably have some knowledge database where you describe how your infrastructure is set up. But yeah, that's documentation. Documentation takes time, and you implement features instead, so you don't document this stuff. That's how our set word it is sometimes. But with the Puppet code, you might have some kind of a documentation of your infrastructure if you do it right, because then you can see, okay, talking about the example before, there's a web server and it connects to this and that database server. And if you want to dig a bit deeper in it, you open this web server class, web server node class or role, whatever, and you can see, okay, every database server has a CouchDB and a MySQL running. And yeah, where else would you look that up if you wouldn't have documentation? So Puppet kind of helps you there as well. There's also automated testing. Every software developer uses some kind of testing these days, and you can do that with your Puppet manifests as well. So that's probably something you can't do with your bash scripts. I know there's probably some bash testing framework, and there's also a bash profiler thingy. I actually know someone who profiled his bash RC once because it was too slow. Weird guy. He's actually sitting in front of me. Sorry. So you can easily create tests for your Puppet manifests or your modules. And this is something that most software developers really like. And Puppet is one of these DevOps buzzwords. So probably the guys who write the Puppet code are some kind of developer and know about these things. Also, one thing that's important, who of you knows dependency injection? I guess some more were too lazy to raise the hand. I understand that. It's the second day. If you don't know it and you're a software developer, please read it up. You really want to do dependency injection. I'm not saying dependency injection container. That's a different thing. But you want to do dependency injection. You also want to do that in Puppet. I showed you these facts before. In most cases, you don't want to use, or I would say you don't want to use the facts within manifests at all. You want to use facts within your node definition, but not in the light HTTPD module, for instance. That's not the place where you should rely on global state, because basically the facts are global state. If I would have used facts within the modules, I probably can't distinguish between development and production that easily. But if I just pass the variables through all the layers of my Puppet manifests, I can change it everywhere where I need to change it. Also, I mentioned before, you want to create reusable code and you want to create reusable components, just like in your software application. But it's something that's not really that obvious when you start doing Puppet, because you don't really realize what you're doing is writing code, like writing an application. It's basically just the same. You have to bear that in mind. There's also Puppet Forge, which is some kind of a repository for Puppet modules. There are also a couple of Puppet modules on GitHub. When you start doing Puppet, from what I experienced, you really don't want to use the modules because they're way too complicated for what you want to do, and you start writing your own stuff, that's totally fine. I did that with a couple of modules as well. But at some point, you're going to realize someone else solved this problem that I just have, and he solved it better than I'm going to do it because I don't want to spend that much time on it. And so it might make sense to check out what's there. And some of them are actually quite good, and you can learn from them as well. I should emphasize the word some of them. There are actually some crappy ones as well. But some are good, so check them out, look if they fit to your requirements, and then use them. Also, a question that's quite common is, how do I deploy my application with Puppet? You can somehow do that. We did it. I hated it. Puppet allows you to install operating system packages, and some allows you to check out Git repositories, for instance, or use, for PHP, that's important, peer installer. But Puppet is not an application deployment tool. There are tools that do that good. Puppet doesn't. It doesn't really help you with it. So probably use something else there. Sorry. There's also the fancy Puppet dashboard, which shows you some, in a master agent setup, some details about the Puppet runs. It tells you, okay, it changed so many resources, and there was maybe an error, I couldn't change that resource, and so on. It's some shiny Ruby application. It's incredibly slow, at least for me. I don't know, maybe I did something wrong. I don't do Ruby. But you might want to check it out, and if you buy this Puppet Enterprise thingy, it comes with the dashboard, and it should run out of the box. There's also the file bucket, which you can enable. It's a Puppet feature that whenever a file is changed, stores the previous content of the files to the file bucket. So if you accidentally changed a file on the production servers and Puppet overwrites it, you can find the previous contents in the file bucket. Not really sure if there's a nice user interface for that, but the Puppet dashboard helps you with it. The question was whether it's enabled by default. I think so. I'm not 100% sure, I'm sorry. There are different locations where it can store these files. You might want to look up what exactly it does. I mentioned that there's a Puppet master agent mode, which is implemented using HTTP. So the Puppet agent connects to the Puppet master using HTTP and uses SSL for encryption and for authentication. So whenever a Puppet node starts for the first time, it generates a local certificate, uses this certificate with the client certificate, by the way, use this certificate when connecting to this Puppet master. Puppet master says, oh, I don't know this certificate, I'm going to store it, and give him nothing, because he's not authenticated. So then you can open up your Puppet master, type Puppet cert list, and it shows you all the certificates that were sent, which it doesn't know yet, and then you can sign the certificate. It's a one-liner again, Puppet sign certificate, and then the host name. And then the communication between those two nodes, between the nodes and the master, is secured using SSL. And only authenticated clients can get any information from the Puppet master. So the files are protected unless you configured something wrong. You can configure it in a way that everything's public, but you don't want to do that. So it's actually using SSL with client certificates. If any one of you ever set that up, it's really annoying. But with Puppet, it all appears automatically and just works. It's one of the only situations. I never managed to get SSL client certificates running with my application, but it works with Puppet easily. There's also Marriott Collective. It's from the same developers like Puppet. It's some server orchestration thingy where you can tell all your servers to restart a service immediately. Puppet would do that on the next Puppet run, or shut them down or something. You might want to check into it. Also quite common question is there some kind of an editor, an integrated development environment, or something like that? And there's this Geppetto, I don't know. It's an Eclipse-based editor for Puppet. I tried it. I'm not very satisfied, but you might want to look it up. It was about a year ago that I tried it, so it maybe changed a bit. Not going to explain you what it is, but if you start using Puppet, you might want to check this thing out. There's one nice thing I like to mention. You can use Puppet for your own computer as well. I set up my Mac with Boxen, which is kind of a collection for Puppet manifests for Macs. So when I get a new Mac, I just have to install Boxen and install Boxen and run it. And afterwards, a couple of applications are installed on my Mac, and some configuration files are changed, whatever. You really want to try that out, and it's totally fine, because yeah, you can just set up a new computer easily and fast. That's an important point. Read the manual, read it a couple of times. Always, every month I find a new resource type in the Puppet documentation, and I'm so happy about it. So there's a list of all resource types that Puppet has. Read that over and over again, and suddenly you'll realize things are so easy with Puppet. When I started doing Puppet, the manual totally sucked, but the IRC was totally helpful. So if you have any problems with Puppet, just go into the Puppet IRC channel, check on the website where it is, and some people are going to help you. I never had this feeling with any other open source tool like I had it with Puppet. I joined their channel, I asked a stupid newbie question, and I got the nicest answer ever, and was actually helping. So that was awesome. Yeah, you want to try a salt stack. It's like the new kid on the block. It's, from what I got, it's really cool. It has some nice features. I haven't used it yet, but it looks nice. Try it out, give it a try. Yeah, I said this one before. I just added the slide right in front of the talk because I couldn't find one of it, but I mentioned it, some Mac thingy. And an important part, you have a staging system for your application, obviously. You also want to do the same for your Puppet manifests, because you can seriously break things with your Puppet manifests. So do not do the first run on the production environment. That's probably a bad thing. And I kind of started with this: version your Puppet manifests. It's basically source code, so please do what you would do to source code. And if you start writing tests, you obviously want a continuous integration for that. And so do that as well, please. Are there any questions left? Probably, but are there any questions you might want to ask now? There's one up there. I can repeat the question, let him run. Actually gives me time to drink, it's nice.
Thanks for the talk, very, very interesting, and it makes me really want to use Puppet right away. I understand that it's mainly for configuring your servers and setting up your services, and you said it's really not a deployment tool.
Right.
Now, I understand that it's not for Java-based applications, but for PHP, can you elaborate a little bit more why you would say it's not really useful to use that for PHP deployments?
We did that for PHP. We created a Debian archive, which was deployed to our servers and installed there. The problem in that particular situation was that installing Debian packages is not atomic, which means it starts installing it and starts removing some files and changing them, but not at the same moment, so the application broke. it's just if you deploy an application, that's what we now, we just upload a new version and at some point change a Zim link, and Puppet doesn't really allow you to do this in a nice way. There are softwares which really help you with deploying and which make everything fun, and Puppet really doesn't. If it works for you, it might be good. Maybe it's different for non-PHP applications, but I didn't find a way that made me happy for PHP applications.
I just have a comment. If you ever manage your config files by Puppet, especially if you manage your user PCs or your end user PCs, write in every config file that is managed by Puppet. Your developer will change his web server config or whatever and restart it. Go have a coffee. Puppet one comes along, changes everything back, restarts his web server, and he starts debugging for hours, changes right. stuff. Puppet comes again. So write it big. Use figlet or whatever. Write big. This file is managed by Puppet. Don't change anything. Contact the system administration or the Puppet master, the DevOps. That's an important thing. Developers will get really mad if you don't do it.
Ask them. They got really mad at me. So yeah, it's a good point. And I actually hated myself a couple of times. One thing I want to add there, I heard from some company, I'm not sure who did that, they said whenever an SSH connection is made to a server, a bug ticket is made, created in their internal bug tracker, because there's some lack of automation. So that's really a bit rude, but you might want to think about some solutions. If you use Puppet, do everything with Puppet. There was some other question somewhere? Wasn't it? Okay, some more questions? Okay, then before I say thank you, if you got any more questions, I'm gonna stay here for like 2 or 3 hours. So just ping me on Twitter and I'll be happy to help you. And with that, thank you for the thing.